When you think about Mark Twain, you probably think about his indelible characters, Huck Finn, Tom Sawyer, or maybe the Mississippi River, which he loved and worked on as a steamboat pilot. But it's worth noting that in his own time, the middle of the 19th century, Twain was better known as a travel writer than a novelist. And he was quite a traveler. During his lifetime, he made 29 separate transatlantic crossings, always adequately supplied with cigars and whiskey. Roy Morris Jr. writes about Mark Twain's travels in his new book, American Vandal, Mark Twain Abroad. He joins us from WUTC in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Roy Morris, welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you for having me, Jeremy.
Well, and before we talk specifically about Twain's travels, I have to say I was a bit surprised in reading about them that he was going so far at that time. How common was that kind of travel all over the globe back in the 1800s?
Well, by the time he started actually traveling abroad, and it was after the Civil War, and the travel had really exploded in those years because of the development of steamships, and which cut the travel time from America to Europe from, I think, 3 weeks to 10 days. So that created a new class of American traveler. Before then, you had to be pretty wealthy to afford to travel abroad. But with the development of the new steamships, it cut the time and the travel expenses in half. And so Twain actually... In 1867, he took part in what was the first prepackaged luxury cruise in American history, which was to Europe and the Holy Land.
And by the way, right before he did that, he had just come back from Hawaii, right, where he had spent some time.
Exactly. Yeah, he spent 6 months in Hawaii. This was at the end of about 5 years that he spent in the West and in San Francisco. And that's the San Francisco Alta California newspaper hired him to be their travel correspondent, and that's when he ended up going to New York and hearing about this cruise that was being planned for Europe.
And this was all about, for him, first of all, the ability to travel, which he thought was very important. I remember a quote from the beginning of your book, you know, if you don't travel, you've really only written one chapter of your life or something like that. But also, this was about making money. Travel books were becoming very popular.
Yeah, that's true. There were thousands of travel books printed in the U.S. in the latter part of the 19th century, and so for Twain, it was actually a way of making money. And throughout his career, he was more prominently known as a travel writer than a novelist. So that was really his bread and butter for a long time.
He was really ahead of his time, wasn't he? When I read about this man and his travels abroad, he doesn't seem like somebody from the 19th century.
No, I think that's one of the things that really does keep Mark Twain vivid to people now, because he was very much sort of the characteristic kind of American in the best sense. He was full of energy and generally good-humored and took people as they came. And that humor kind of comes across and keeps him fresh in a way that you know, sort of dignified people aren't.
The interesting thing, though, is that he didn't seem too excited about some of the places that he went on this first trip, on this luxury cruise line that he took to Europe and the Holy Land. I want to read a little bit here from your book and some of his thoughts as he goes to Venice, Italy. He describes the city's fabled gondolas as an inky, rusty old canoe with a sable hearse body clapped onto the middle of it, powered by a mangy, barefooted gutter snipe. And then he said the city reminded him most strongly of an overflowed Arkansas town, the streets full of mud and rubbish.
That's what made the book that he wrote about his trip, The Innocents Abroad, I think what really made it the huge bestseller that it was. It was actually the biggest selling book in the U.S. since Uncle Tom's Cabin. And it was because he took, before then, travel writers had really sort of taken a reverential view of Europe and the famous sites. And Twain, of course, you know, was never reverential about anything. And he kind of became the spokesman for the new traveler, who he called the American Vandal. And he said that the American Vandal was the roving, independent, free and easy character, the class of American who was not elaborately educated, cultivated, or refined. In other words, he was sort of like Mark Twain himself. And so he was really the ideal sort of travel writer for the new American who had some money but was not rich and wanted to go abroad and see things for himself. And that was what was important to Twain. He said that he wrote Innocents Abroad in the sense of seeing things with his own eyes rather than somebody else's eyes. And so that was part of the way that he was unimpressed generally with a lot of the famous sights that he saw.
What did impress him on those journeys abroad?
He really liked, for some reason, he really liked Germany, and he liked Berlin. He said it was the new Chicago.
Hmm.
Although he, of course, famously struggled with what he called the damn German language. It said once that he would rather decline two drinks than one German verb.
Well, and he actually, I'm glad you brought up Berlin, because he really liked Berlin a lot better than Paris.
Yeah, he did not like Paris or the French, partly, I think, because his books were never translated into French and he couldn't speak French. So they were not, you know, they didn't really know who he was or were not real impressed with him. And he was not real happy with France.
Now, these trips that he was taking were not cheap. And in fact, even for him, he had some financial problems as well.
Right. Yes. He was fortunate to marry a wealthy young woman from Elmira, New York. They built a lovely house in Hartford, Connecticut. For several years, he made a good living also with his books and with the publishing company he started up. But some bad business investments, particularly for a new typesetting machine that never worked, he lost pretty much all of his money, and so he had to go. At that time, it was cheaper actually to live in Europe than in the United States. So he and his three daughters moved to Europe in, I believe, 1891. And then in early 1895, he got an offer to do a year-long tour, a lecture tour around the world. So he spent almost a year touring the English-speaking countries, what he called Little Englands of Australia, New Zealand, India, and South Africa, giving talks to try to recoup some of his money he'd lost.
And as he traveled abroad, did he become more enamored of the United States and of Missouri or less?
He always, I said in my book, he really, at heart, he was always sort of a Hannibal, Missouri boy, but especially the round-the-world tour that he made in the 1890s, kind of opened his eyes somewhat to the whole problem of expansionism and imperialism, and it kind of made him, he became a real opponent of the United States involvement in the Philippines, and when he actually joined the Anti-Imperialist League when he got back to this country, so he became more of a vocal critic of not only America but the great powers and the way they were treating sort of the indigenous people in the world. He said sort of famously that there are many amusing things in the world, among them the white man's notion that he's less savage than other savages. And he also said that as for himself, he could stand any society. All that I care about is that a man is a human being. That's enough for me. He can't be any worse. So His viewpoint kind of darkened as he got older.
Well, and you write in this book about his last visit to his hometown of Hannibal, Missouri, and I wonder if you could take us to that on page 219.
It was a very emotional, sort of bittersweet homecoming for him. And I talk about in the book how he visited, you know, many of the old sites. He handed out diplomas to the graduating class at the high school and gave a final appearance at the Labanaugh Club, Hannibal spelled backwards, where he startled the 500 assembled guests by dissolving into tears and sobbing helplessly for several moments. "I realize that this must be my last visit to Hannibal," he explained, "and in bidding you hail, I also bid you farewell." He left by train the next morning, never to return. Despite his long decades of world travel, in his inmost heart he would always be the barefoot boy whitewashing his mother's picket fence and watching the steamboats coming up the river.
Hmm. Roy Morris, what does Mark Twain mean to this country now in 2015?
Well, I I think obviously he's considered one of the great novelists and humorists, and I do think that his travel broadened him and gave him a more humanistic perspective on the world. So he liked to say that he was not an American but the American.
That's Roy Morris Jr., whose new book is American Vandal, Mark Twain Abroad. Roy, fascinating book. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Jeremy.